This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
The Southwest, the Gulf Coast, these places wouldn't have had these massive population booms if not for air conditioning.
Who doesn't enjoy that refreshing feeling when you walk in from 90-degree heat to the cool blast of an air-conditioned room? Last month, extreme heat blistered most of the U.S., from the Northeast to the Southwest, and practically every place in between. Weather experts are telling us that extreme is going to be the new normal when it comes to summer temperatures. Thank heavens for AC. Approximately 86% of American households are equipped with air conditioners, and the rest of the world is rapidly catching up. But while it undoubtedly helps human beings survive extreme heat, AC is a huge and growing greenhouse gas offender. My guest today on Sea Change Radio is reporter Katie Herzog, who recently wrote a piece for Grist on the social and environmental costs of air conditioning. We discuss the past and future of these machines, the possibility of solar-powered AC units, and the irony of this thing that's making us hotter by keeping us cool. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Grist reporter Katie Herzog. Katie, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks for having me.
So you recently wrote a piece about air conditioning and how it could break us all. Why don't you first give us a short history of air conditioning and air cooling systems? We kind of take it for granted.
Yeah. So air conditioning, or at least some sort of comfort cooling systems, have been around really for eons. Starting in ancient Rome, the wealthy would cool their homes by circulating water between walls. And then all the way up to China in the second century, they invented the first room-sized fan. And it was, unfortunately, probably for whoever powered it by hand. So not exactly easy to use. But modern air conditioning systems weren't invented until the 19th century. And the first I don't know if you could really call it air conditioning, but the first modern comfort cooling system was developed in the 1850s by a Florida physician named John Gorey, who believed that cold was good for healing the sick. And so he would cool sick rooms by suspending basins of ice from the ceiling. But unfortunately, you can see that there would be some problems with this. For one, there was no way to make ice mechanically, so it had to be imported from the northern states. And, you know, clearly there would be some problems with that. For one, it's hard to transport, it's hard to store, you'd lose a lot of it in transit. So John Gorey started experimenting with artificial cooling by using a steam engine to force air through a tank of chilled brine. So this worked, and it didn't really catch on, but he was granted the first patent for a modern air conditioning system in 1851.
So we don't use Gorey air conditioning systems, unfortunately, for old John Gorey, but he can be credited with the invention of the modern air conditioning system.
Yeah, he was, I don't know if we would credit him for the invention of the modern air conditioning system. We would credit him for the invention of the first mechanical cooling system.
Okay.
But yeah, his invention didn't catch on. And so it wasn't until 50 years later, in the beginning of the 20th century, an engineer in upstate New York named Willis Haviland Carrier, his company had a client that was a printing press in Brooklyn, and so they were losing a lot of their products because of humidity was ruining the printing process. And so Willis Haviland Carrier tried to solve this problem by he realized that you had to lower not just cool rooms but also lower the humidity. And so he developed a system that pumped air over coils chilled with ammonia, and then this cool air was expelled with a fan, which both lowered the temperature and humidity levels. So this was, I think, really Willis Haviland Carrier we could probably credit with the birth of the modern air conditioning system.
And that's a company that we all know. Carrier is one of the big air conditioning companies still today, right?
Yeah, Carrier still exists. They still do good business. And there's more business to be had. Yeah, the whole world will be air conditioned probably by the end of the century, or at least vast parts of it.
So take us through the 20th century quickly and how these systems became more ubiquitous.
Well, after Carrier developed his system for this printing press, about 25 years later, the first modern air conditioning was installed at a theater in Times Square. So that was the first place that was available to the public. 1925, you could visit Times Square and go get chilled from the high summer temps in a movie theater, which is really where the idea of the summer blockbuster came in, because people used to go to these, public spaces because they didn't have AC at home. And so AC had finally entered the public sphere as of about 1925, but it was still really, really expensive, as you would expect. These were room size units. And so they didn't catch on in homes for really another couple of decades. So until the middle of the century, only about 10% of American households had air conditioning, and they cost anywhere at the time between $10,000 and $50,000, which is equivalent now to about $100,000 to $600,000. So it was really limited to the wealthy.
Super wealthy, really, huh?
Yeah, super wealthy. I think the first home system was built at, a wealthy person's home in, I think, Minneapolis, but they apparently never lived in the house and it never got used. So by the middle of the 20th century, it was still pretty rare, but it quickly caught on. Window units were invented, really drastically lowering the price and making it available to the common person. It was really the post-World War housing bubble, when the federal government started giving out housing grants to all these returning soldiers from war and their families to build homes, that made air conditioning into the mass use product that it is today. Homes started being built, mass produced, and with pre-installed air conditioning. So instead of building homes with insulation, ventilation, ceiling fans, attic fans, all these things, we had this massive burst of sort of cheaply built mass-produced homes that all required air conditioning, and that's kind of where it started for us. And now it's sort of universal. I think at this point 86% of Americans have air conditioning in their homes.
And worldwide it's also exploding, right?
Yeah, worldwide it's exploding. Right now in you take China, for instance, this rapidly industrializing nation, within 15 years, Chinese households went from almost 0% air conditioning, or urban Chinese households, almost 0% air conditioning to almost 100% air conditioning. So sales are increasing across the world, also in Indonesia, India, China, I'm sorry, Brazil, Mexico, currently 13% of households have AC, but experts predict that rates will increase to 81% by the end of the century. So in total, researchers think that in the next 15 years across the world, we'll install 700 million air conditioners and 1.6 billion by 2050. So there's a lot of AC being built.
Now let's turn to the environmental costs of all this air conditioning. Obviously, it takes a lot of electricity to generate that power. But first, let's talk about the emissions. I remember the CFC, the chlorofluorocarbon issue, being key to greenhouse gas emissions and other kind of pollution issues in the 80s. Has that been addressed somewhat by the industry?
Yeah, CFCs were banned in the late 70s, early 80s because of the connection between the hole in the ozone layer. So after it was discovered that refrigerants like CFCs and also which were also used in aerosols like hairspray were causing this hole in the ozone layer, countries agreed to phase them out, and so they were replaced with hydrofluorocarbons, or HFCs, which don't cause a hole in the ozone layer, but they're also really potent greenhouse gases. And so when these gases leak out during use or maintenance or disposal of AC units, they're really bad for climate change. And so right now, an estimated 5% of our annual energy consumption is used by air conditioning. So that's really huge. But it also spews about 100 million tons of carbon dioxide into the air each year. And that's just in the U.S.
And where are some of the innovations coming from in the industry? How are companies cutting down on the amount of energy that's needed to power these air conditioning units? Where are the efficiencies coming from?
That's a good question. Well, right now, so world leaders met just a couple weeks ago to work on a plan to phase out HFCs because of the high carbon footprint of them. In terms of efficiencies, I'm not actually too familiar with that. There are companies that are working to, you know, install heat pumps and things like that in homes, which is a more efficient cooling system than AC, but also doesn't work all over the country because you're taking cool air from the ground. And so if you live in a place where it's really hot and humid, it's probably not going to work to just you're replacing hot air with other hot air. So that's a really good question that I honestly probably need to do a little bit more research on in terms of the efficiencies.
I would imagine a lot of it reaches back to the pre-air conditioning days where people had to design homes and buildings to maximize cooling in terms of better insulation and glass, et cetera.
Yeah. So after this housing boom in the 40s and 50s, after World War II, when all of these homes started being produced on a mass scale, we really did away with the efficiencies that would have negated the need for air conditioning. So even though people lived in, let's say, Phoenix for thousands of years, it would be really hard to live in Phoenix now without AC. And part of the reason for that is because we've built these homes that aren't resistant to the natural climate that sort of make it more extreme. And industrialization has a lot to do with that. Like, there's the urban heat island effect, which is anytime, you know, you've probably noticed anytime you're in a city on a hot day, it's hotter within the city than it is in the countryside. And this is because of all the concrete and asphalt, which emits heat. So we've done a really poor job of negating the need for AC. And so we've built these, our homes or office buildings that require it, which unfortunately, you know, makes the air outside even hotter. And so we have this vicious cycle where the more we use AC, the more we need AC.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Katie Herzog. She's a reporter at Grist. Katie, it would seem that solar might be able to help alleviate some of these energy issues surrounding air conditioning. Is there any hope that we can kind of integrate renewable technology with air conditioning?
Yeah, you know, you would think that solar would really be an effective way to power an air conditioning unit, considering that, you know, we need the air conditioner at the same time that solar panels can absorb peak energy, you know, the height of summer, right, when it's really sunny. Unfortunately, the technology isn't really there yet in terms of mass air conditioning by solar. There are a couple of different systems, but the most effective ones are hybrid system. It seems like that switch between solar and battery powered as needed. And these are expensive, and that's sort of what the issue is that while the technology exists, it isn't actually accessible to most people. They're several thousand dollars compared to, you know, a window unit that you can get for a couple of $100s. So the technology might be there, but it hasn't come down in price enough to make it really accessible as a replacement for fossil fuel powered air conditioners, at least not yet.
How does the technology work?
Well, there's a couple of different systems. With the hybrid system, that's a combination of photovoltaic technology, which is, you know, what you think of when you see solar panels on a roof, and direct current. So the way it works is the power source switches between the solar energy and a battery as needed. And so it can, the system can run on a backup battery as it's charging up new solar power. But, you know, air conditioning is something that people typically run, you know, all day and all night, because nights tend to also be pretty humid. So, you know, you have to have good battery storage for that. There's also, you could like DIY this on your own or purchase a professional system, but solar powered evaporator coolers or absorption chillers, and those aren't really air conditioners as you think of in sort of the classic sense with a coolant. They work by sort of harnessing really the same technology as sweating, oddly enough. So it uses evaporation and condensation. Cold or cool air is fanned over, blown over a material saturated with water. I actually made one of these in my house and it worked okay. We took essentially a bucket, lined it with this sort of foam like cooling pad, and then used a hose with holes poked in it to drip water around it, and then forced air through with a fan, and the air is expelled through these holes in the bucket. And you can power that with a pretty, you know, a simple solar panel. Unfortunately, these don't work in humid climates. They add moisture to the air, not subtract it. So probably not going to do that good on the, you know, the hot East Coast or the depths of Florida. But for dry climates, for arid climates like the Southwest, evaporative coolers or swamp coolers are actually pretty popular.
Getting back to the ones that cost in the thousands of dollars, I assume there's no rebate program in place similar to home solar panels. Is that your understanding?
You know, it probably depends on the area where you live. There was for a while, and I'm not sure if this is still happening, Solar City and Carrier, the first air conditioning company, were partnering to provide some sort of big rebates, like $1,000 rebates, I believe, for their solar systems, but I'm not sure if that's still going on. So, and that's the thing, you know, if, you know, the fossil fuel industry still gets massive subsidies. If we took all of that and converted the entire grid to solar, you know, maybe this would work. But just the way that the systems aren't set up now, you know, without a massive conversion to renewables, you know, people really have to do this on their own.
But just if we're doing an apples to apples comparison, comparing solar panels to air conditioning units that have solar integrated into them, discrete from the solar panels on your house. Yes, they're more expensive than a window unit, but they're a lot less expensive than solar panels. And I would imagine in a place like New Mexico or Phoenix or some very hot places that air conditioning is a significant chunk of one's energy bill.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And plus, you know, the savings, the long-term savings of switching to renewable, you know, the installation is high, but the actual cost itself is, you know, you'll save. But in terms of, you know, rebates and subsidies, I believe it really comes down to the state. So, you know, in states where there's lots of solar power, those aren't necessarily the states that, or states where there's lots of sunshine, like the Sun Belt, those aren't necessarily states that are actually all that friendly to renewables for political reasons.
And do you think that there's a chance for these hybrid units, these solar integrated air conditioning units, to, once they become more popular, that prices could come down and they may be the answer for some of the developing countries that we've mentioned?
Yeah, certainly. Right now, they're, you know, at thousands of dollars on retail. There's very little way that, you know, developing nations, that people in developing nations are going to be able to afford these. But like everything else, you know, drugs that cost us a lot of money in the United States can cost significantly less in developing countries, and the same could be true of technology. You know, this technology isn't inherently expensive for what it is. I suppose the batteries are, and the panels themselves, but it's the market that, you know, creates the value and the cost. So yeah, I think with, you know, improved technology, the price would come down. Well, it doesn't look like we're quite there yet. Just looking at the reviews of solar window or solar air conditioners online, the reviews are all pretty subpar. People don't seem to be too pleased with what they're purchasing at the moment.
Oh no. Well, that's too bad, because we're talking about air conditioning the rest of the world. It would be a real challenge to then go back and update them all to become more energy efficient.
Right.
If we can kill two birds with one stone and get people a clean, efficient way of cooling their homes right away, that would be ideal.
Yeah, it certainly would. You know, maybe the UN needs to get on it. I don't think solar air conditioning has been a priority at this point yet. At this point, it's a lot about just like getting solar electricity and industrializing places like India so they have power at all. But yeah, certainly solar AC would take care of a big problem that we're going to have in the coming years.
Turning back to the U.S. for a moment, Phoenix, Arizona is a city which is very reliant upon air conditioning. Obviously, though, there were people living in the area before air conditioning came around.
Yeah, so before Phoenix, as we know it, was Phoenix, it was home to indigenous people, that specifically, and I'm probably going to mispronounce this, but the Hohokam people, who thrived in that region for thousands of years, and they did it without AC. So how did they do that? Well, they built a system of canals, so they lived along the water. The canals provided vegetation, which has a real cooling effect. They also did things like you can hang a cool sheet or a piece of cloth, and I'm sorry, a wet sheet or a piece of cloth in doorways, and when the breeze blows, that adds a cooling effect. So they probably also just lived differently, staying out of the sun in the heat of the day, sleeping outside at night, things like that. But the biggest difference is that they weren't living in a climate that was full of concrete, so that in itself has just made the climate there so much more hot and inhospitable, since modern humans took over and altered the landscape.
Too hot. This town is too hot. Too hot. Too hot. Now they call it.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/seachangeradio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Katie Herzog. She's a reporter at Grist. So Katie, obviously there are the haves and the have-nots in America, and not everybody, as you mentioned, is going to be able to have air conditioning. But this is actually the norm in lots of equatorial places. Why don't you explain the challenges that modern civilization faces as the planet heats up and air conditioning is kind of lagging behind in terms of implementation?
Yeah, this is a really interesting issue, and it's also sort of a moral issue. So the United States has been heavily air conditioned over the past, you know, 3, 4, or 5 decades. But we've also realized just what a huge impact that has on the climate. And so now we're in this position of having already done the damage and then watching the rest of the world approach the point where they're going to start becoming heavily air conditioning. And so the problem there is we're sort of sitting here from a remove saying air conditioning is bad. It takes way too much energy. The carbon impact, the climate impact is huge. You know, don't do it. But how can we say that to these other, you know, industrializing nations that, you know, want AC. They want the modern comforts that we have. And, you know, that same thing, that the same could be said of electricity, of cars, of all of the things that we sort of take advantage for that haven't reached other parts of the world. And so it's, you know, we can't really say don't use air conditioning because we've been using it for the last 50 years. But the climate impacts will be huge when the rest of the world has fully embraced AC and can afford it.
And where is all that money going to be coming from, and how are we going to power it?
That's the question. You know, with the Paris Climate Accord that was ratified, or is being ratified, that was decided in December, countries have set limits on their carbon emissions. And so those can be achieved with renewable, cutting out coal, things like that. But the problem is coal, natural gas, these energies that are bad for the climate are also the cheapest. So that's really where the tension lies, is what can we afford, you know, or what can the rest of the world afford, but versus what the climate needs.
And let's turn from the macro issues for a moment in terms of economics and environmental issues, and just talk from a societal standpoint. How has air conditioning changed the way we interact?
Air conditioning has changed so much of life in America. Just if you think about, so you're in San Francisco, I'm in Seattle, so we live in two of the only places where that aren't heavily air conditioned, probably. But for most of the rest of the country, you go in the summertime, you go from your air conditioned house to your air conditioned car to your air conditioned office, and then you repeat that at the end of the day. So we just don't go outside that much. And you know, I sort of think that's inherently sad. Everybody might, that's sort of a judgment call, but the impacts are greater than just not going outside. One thing that air conditioning has done is it has increased commuter times. It's led to the rise of sprawl in a lot of ways, because if you didn't have air conditioning, would you be willing to sit in traffic for 2 to 4 hours a day in a place like Phoenix or Los Angeles to commute? Probably not. So it's changed cities, it's changed structures, it's changed the way that we live in so many different ways.
Or would you have bought that sprawling house in the suburbs if you didn't have air conditioning to begin with? I mean, the cities are a easier place to cool because you have smaller units, right?
Right. The Southwest, the Gulf Coast, these places wouldn't have had these massive population booms if not for air conditioning.
It's definitely a double-edged sword that this incredible technology has taken hold. It's allowed us to flourish, but in the end, it could be the death of us in some respects.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we also need to think about is that air conditioning, the costs aren't just in terms of the emissions and the power usage. There's also water. And so by that, I mean, if the Southwest, like right now, we're piping water in from the Colorado, the Rocky Mountains, wherever to, feed and water the Southwest, Southern California. And that probably wouldn't happen if not for AC, because people just wouldn't live there. So there's just the consequences for this one invention have been really massive.
Katie Herzog, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Samford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Albert Collins, Mr. Sadhead, and Prince Buster. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.